Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Hey, welcome back, everybody, once again to Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 35, and this is February the 18th, 2014. I'm your host, Jack, to take you through that magical ride through your server room, your network, and to help you with all those little things that go hiccup in the night. Hey, first of all, it is good to be back here once again in the studio. As you know, last week's show was on the road, and I recorded that with a... laptop actually tethered into my iPhone, and I was using the LTE network, which is an amazingly fast network, especially if you're dealing with a hotel internet connection that's kind of shabby. And man, it was really shabby. And I think where they get you at, though, and I don't know if you folks out there listening to this travel much, but where they get you at, honestly, is... They have a complimentary internet service, and the complimentary internet service is just very, very crappy, or shabby, as I like to refer to it. And then they have a prime internet service for $9.95 a night, $10 a day, and I was thinking, that's a lot of money. So it was a lot easier to take my iPhone, and on the iPhone, they have a built-in hotspot. Now, Verizon used to charge you extra when you tethered your phone for the internet connection. But I guess now they figure, look, you're paying for 4 gigabytes or 2 gigabytes or whatever you're paying for, so it's okay to tether that in and to use that internet connection. So that's exactly what I did. I just turned on the hotspot, put the password on my laptop, and sure enough, I was able to stream out to Spreaker there, and you guys can hear me out there okay, and everything worked out really well. I was really impressed with it, and I didn't use that much of my data package, so it worked out okay, and I was able to do a show. So let's go ahead and talk a little bit. First of all, if you have a chance, check out my website. That is tipsfromtheserverroom.com, where you can comment on these shows. And I'm surprised with how many techies out there listen to this show, and nobody gives me any feedback. I've received some feedback, and I've received some emails, but I don't receive a lot of feedback from you out there. And that's devastating to a podcaster, guys and girls out there. We want to hear from you and say, hey, I listen to the show and, you know, I'd like to hear about this. Or I listened to that show. Can you tell me more about something you talked about? That is why we have those websites up there for you to comment on these shows. Also, if you go to iTunes, if you're listening to this and you're subscribing from iTunes, I would like if you would go to iTunes and click on the review button and give a little review of the show and say, hey, this guy's okay. He kind of knows what he's talking about. And, you know, it's not so much for a pat on my back or anything, folks. What that does is allows that show to be brought up in iTunes a little bit higher in the classification of technology, and for other people to find it easier and for them to actually come into the show and listen and learn with us here. So you can do that, or you can simply leave me a voice message. And this is a Google phone, so it's really simple to do. And I had a gentleman just last week call me. I actually returned his call through the Google voice number, and we had a little conversation, and I told you about that during the last show. But that number is 724-701-0550. Very easy to leave a voice message on there and just say, hi, Jack, this is something I've been thinking about. Or if you just would feel more comfortable, you can leave me an email at jackstechcorner@gmail.com, or follow me on Twitter, which a lot of you have, and I appreciate that really from the bottom of my heart. That is at Technoman, where you'll find like different things. If you're into photography and technology and education, I write a daily blog post that can be found at jackstechcorner.com, where you can sign up for those. So what are we going to talk about tonight? I just had a conversation with my wife just about an hour ago, and I said, I wish I knew what I was going to talk about tonight on the podcast. And she says, you know what? You're never really searching for words. She said, you usually have this stuff in your head, and it's very easy to roll along with it. So I thought tonight, I know a lot of you out there may be job seekers, and that might be why you're listening to these shows, to get a little bit more educated on servers and networks and the things that go bump in the night. And you want to be ready for that interview out there. You want to go out there and get that really, really good job. So I had the honor, because we do this once every about 6 months. We work at the local college, and we bring interns into our school district that work under us to learn for the last 3 months of their education. Well, we get the honor to interview these young men, young women coming through our field, and we get to ask them certain questions. So I thought tonight for this show would be really kind of fun just for me to go over these questions that we asked them and to try to give you some idea of people's knowledge out there to let you know that maybe you're not so far off with your knowledge. You may be way ahead of these kids, and maybe you're a little bit behind, but we're going to touch base on that. And I just want to give you a feel of interview questions during a technology type interview that you may encounter when you go for that job that you're looking for. You're seeking that job, either an entry-level job or a high-paying job, but you want to feel that you can shine in the computer field. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight. So let me just bring up my questions here, and I'm going to start going through these, and we're going to talk a little bit about each one of these. I'm just going to pick out some of the key questions. We can't go through them all, actually, because there's probably about 40 of them. So we're going to just touch base on these. And if you would like a copy of these questions that we wrote, by all means, drop me an email at that jackstechcorner@gmail.com. And I will send you a free copy of them so you have them. You can look them over and say, hey, this is stuff that you may hear out there in the industry. So the first one we talked about the students about is if you talk to other students in your school. Now, these kids and some adults, we've had adults from here also, work in a group, all right? So they work in this little group, and they work on a lot of virtual switches and virtual servers, naturally, because they're not going to let them work on actual hardware. I don't know why. That's the way it is. But we ask them, what would your classmates tell us your strong point in computers would be? So, and they have to refer, you know, tell us this stuff. Tell us what they think their strong points are. So think of your strong points in computers, because you're going to be asked this question during an interview. And just ask them, say, hey, what, you know, my strong points are either networking, computer servers, firewalls, maybe, you know, maybe your strong point could be routers, and stuff like that. So you have to start getting this stuff in your head and know how you would respond to these. The worst thing for me for a job interview when I have applicants sitting in front of me and I'm interviewing is, I don't know. We didn't learn that yet. That is not the proper answer. So you have to get these questions in your head and get prepared for that interview. All right. So the next question we talked to them about is, what is a VLAN? Now, and what kind of switches do you need to set a VLAN up? And we get all kind of answers for this thing. A VLAN is a virtual local area network. Yeah, I know what the letters stand for, but what is it and what kind of switches do you need and why would you set it up? So we get all kind of answers. The main answer we're looking for, because I have the answers that we are looking for on this document, would be to separate traffic away from the standard network traffic. Also, to increase overall security. That would be enough. That would be all you need to know about a VLAN. We didn't ask you how to set it up. And as far as what kind of switches you want, you do need managed switches to set up a VLAN. Because if you can't get into your switch with an IP address, you can't manage it to set up a VLAN. It just won't work. Now, let me tell you another thing I ask about VLAN, since we're on the subject right now and talking about it. I ask these people, I say, look, what happens with your VLAN and if you have a couple 5-port switches between switch A and switch B? And it happens. We put these little 5-port switches in the network here and there. So you have a connection going from switch A to switch B, but it's going through a 5-port unmanaged switch. How would your VLAN be set up? And these kids, well, you see them. You'll see them sitting there scratching their head. and thinking about it and talking and like, And then I get, because the proper answer is you can't. You cannot do it because you can't jump an unmanaged switch in your managed switch units to set up that VLAN. That is a definite problem. So you have to get that, you have to find that 5-port switch, locate it, and get it out of your network. All right, so here is, then we start putting them through a little bit of scenario questions. So here's one. You're working on a VM, and you lose network connectivity, so your remote desktop session closes because you're remoted into this virtual machine. So your local network connection is working on the actual computer that you have sitting in front of you. What would be your next step to correct this issue and to find out what's happening to your VM environment? And folks, this has happened to us. I give people real-world scenarios because it can happen in your network, and then you're sitting there scratching your head going, what just happened? Well, what you need to do, and what we found the easiest way to do this, to before you try to pull any wires, before you try to reboot any servers, go to your desktop computer where you have vSphere loaded. Now, vSphere is the client software that allows you to see those virtual machines, which you use probably to initially set up your virtual machines. You will log into vSphere. One, make sure that server is running because it might have did an update and it might have rebooted or shut down on you. You want to restart that particular virtual server. Or something can have seriously happened and maybe a file got corrupted and that server will not start any longer. But that is where you'll get to see the actual virtual machine because you can't remote desktop into it anymore. So that would be the proper answer. Here's a question that many people out there interviewing you are going to ask you. And they're going to bring this up and they're going to say, look, this is something that I want to talk to you about. What was the driving reason for wanting to become a computer technologist? Now, the wrong answer is I thought I would make a lot of money. Wrong answer, because we don't make a lot of money when we start in this industry. And I know a lot of you guys and girls out there are coming out of fresh out of college and going, they told us we'll be making $100,000 a year. Yeah, maybe one day, but not today. We, as well as anybody else in any industry, you have to work yourself up to a certain level. You have to become that important person in the network, and you have to prove yourself. See, that's key. You have to prove yourself. And a lot of people don't want to prove themselves in any industry. Everybody wants to start at the top. I know I did. I said, hey, I'm a technologist. I want to be the technology director. I want to be the CIO. It's not going to happen. Unless mom and dad owns the company and they say, hey, Junior, you're the CIO. It's not going to happen. You have to prove yourself to other people and they will move you up to those positions. So your driving reason to be a computer technologist may be, hey, I really liked computers. When I was in high school, we hear a lot of times when I was in high school, I started to learn a little bit about programming. I thought, this computer stuff is pretty cool. And then they went on to be computer technologists. A few weeks ago, you heard my daughter on the show with me talking about network cables and running networking. And she is currently working with the tech department in her high school. So now she feels that she may want to be a computer technologist. Okay, so you might be thinking, well, Dad, how do you feel about that? Well, I've been pushing her into nursing because I feel the medical field is more secure than our field. But then again, especially if you're listening to this, and guys, don't get me wrong, don't think I'm sexist or anything. I've just been in the field for a long time. Women, girls out there, you can write your own ticket as a computer technologist because it is a man-driven field. Not to say that they're going to look at you and go, ooh, you're really pretty, I'm going to hire you. No. We want to see more women in the field. And guys, don't bash me about this one, but I don't think any field should be driven by any one sex. And women are very good computer technologists. They see things, they can fill things in a certain way because they're not driven to it at a young age. I think guys, you'll usually see young boys sitting at Christmas time banging away on a Windows laptop, writing viruses or spyware and kind of laughing. Girls don't really get into that. Girls get into the computer because they want to look up something. And don't get me wrong, girls, again, I'm not sexist. But they want to do some online shopping, or and they think it's cool. And then they start wondering how that works. And then, like my daughter, they get into something, and then all of a sudden they slide into the computer field, and there's a lot of jobs out there for females. So let's move on to another question here. What is a default gateway, and what's its purpose? Again, something you need to know. The gateway is not the way to go across the Golden Gate Bridge. That's not a gateway. Of course, I guess it is a gateway, but not the gateway we're referring to. Not the answer I would like to have. You know, the proper default gateway is the last point of your network that leads you outside of your network to either the internet or across the wide area network to another network. And that is the default gateway. Whatever that IP address is your gateway outside of your network. Here's one I love. What is a DMZ and what is its purpose? Well, DMZ, they'll say, is a demilitarized zone. Okay, that's great. Again, just like VLAN, they're telling me what the letters are. I know what it is. I wrote it. You know, I wrote it down on the paper. I know what it means, but what does it do for you? And they'll tell you. It's basically a way to put a computer on the edge of your network in front of your firewall. So, folks, it doesn't have to be behind your firewall. It sits out in that DMZ area, and it's all alone, usually given an IP address outside of your subnet so people can get to the resources, the web pages, the FTP site, whatever you have on there, without having to come into your network and actually have a real address. Now, years ago, we did this. When I owned my internet service, we set up a DMZ because we really didn't have a better means to do things. But today, firewalls are really, really good, and you can open up port 80, bring your web traffic into any server in your network, and be just fine without really having to be too concerned about, oh my God, that person's in my network. If you're only serving a port 80 web page, then yes, it can be hacked. I know you're sitting out there going, Jack, it can be hacked. It can be. But it makes it a lot harder if you only open up one port and not allow all the other ports to come in there. All right. So I'm just going through here, trying to bring up something else for you here. All right. So then a company may give you scenario questions. If it's a good person interviewing you, they are going to give you some scenarios. So here's one. And you can answer this before I give you the answer. So I'm going to give a pause here and let you think about this a minute, and then I'm going to give you the answer of what you would look for. So you walk into the CEO's office, and when you walk in there, he says his computer's running slow. We've all heard this before, and it's kind of hiccuping, and he's getting a lot of pop-ups. What, you know, so you look at it, and you notice it's full of spyware and viruses. So you think, well, that's fine. I'm going to re-image your computer. What would you look for on that local computer that you might have to back up? What is some key areas of a local computer that you might have to back up and, put maybe on a flash drive or a external storage device? So think about that for just a minute, and then we're going to give you the answer. Okay. So the answer is that we look for is, one is personal bookmarks, because unless you're using roaming profiles, those are stored on the local computer. If you wipe that computer out, your CEO is going to be really upset if he don't have his bookmarks. He or she don't have her bookmarks anymore. Also, desktop documents. These are killer. Why do people keep putting the actual documents on the desktop and they save them there? That is killer, because if your hard drive blows or crashes, goodbye documents. Also, any local documents. These would be under like My Documents folder, and anything that, even though we tell our people keep everything on the server, it doesn't always happen. So back that up as well. And anything else that you want to poke around a little bit for and look, and make sure you question the person. That's key. Make sure that you actually question that person and say, look, what else might you have on this computer that I need to back up? That's really key. And a lot of our work that we do is actually some kind of detective work. So I'm going down here a little bit more. Here's a common sense computer question for you. You're asked to check out a computer system with no sound. What is your first step at troubleshooting? So, and all of a sudden I get people, are the speakers on? Which is, that's one of the good ones, you know, because a lot of times the speakers can be off. If they're using headphones, is the headphone jack plugged in? Okay. Is the sound card operating properly? Is the sound card seated in the PCI slot or PCIe slot properly? Okay. But we found about 90 times out of 100 is somebody actually muted the sound. So with the click of a mouse, that job's over, you can be completed, and you can move on. Folks, in our business, it's the little things that's going to kill you. Because if you just came through college and you're looking for a job in the industry, you have a ton of information in your head. You have a ton of data in your brain that's going through there and that you're thinking about day to day. And you were trained to be the very best. And you're trained to dig into something very in depth. But first, look at the surface of any problem you get called for. We had a person call us one day because there was a networking issue. I had three techs go down there, and all three techs did basically the same thing, what they were trained to do. Is there any network connectivity on the card? Can you see any lights on? No, there's no lights on. Card probably is bad. Let's open the computer. Let's pull the card out, and let's reseat the card. That didn't work. Let's take the card out. Let's go down to the office. Let's get a brand new network card. Put the brand new network card in there, reload the new software. Did it correct the problem? No. Let's uninstall the TCP/IP stack and let's reload the TCP/IP stack. Did it fix the problem? No. They call me in. They say, hey, can you come down? Because three of us looked at this. We all three can't fix it. We don't know what's wrong with it. I go. The first thing I do is I follow the cable back to where it's plugged into the wall. And I found out that somebody actually bumped it or pulled it out of the wall. So they had no network connectivity at the cable end. Again, look at the surface. Here's another one you're going to get at least 3 times out of 4. You're going to get this because we get this stuff. Okay, I get a call in the morning. Hey, Jack, my computer was working absolutely great last night when I went home from work. I turned everything off. I came in this morning. It won't power up. Will the monitor power up? Nope, the monitor won't power up either. Something's broken on my computer. Well, did you check anything? No, because I just called you because you're the tech guys. Okay, fine. So we walk over. I take a look. The very first thing you better look for, before you even look, I've had people say, oh, the power supply. Oh, it blew a circuit in the board. Something happened. First thing you look for is the power strip. Because on the power strip itself, a lot of times you might have cleaning people in your office. They may bump it and they shut the power down. That is could be the issue, and it's very easy to remedy. Here was one. This is one of my favorite questions I ask every person that comes in for an interview. And really, I don't even really care what the answer is. I'm just looking for knowledge to see how much knowledge you have in your brain. What's the differences between RAID 0, RAID 1, RAID 5, and RAID 10? And recently, we just went over all these in a session here in a podcast not too long ago, so you might want to go back and listen to that one. Because I had a very good comment when I went over RAID 0, RAID 1, and RAID 5. And I went over these, and they're all very good. They're all, one is striped with parity, one is striped with parity that has a failover. Then ask them how many drives are each, you know, 2, 3, and then, you know, minimum of 4, or 3 drives, and then 4. And then I say, well, what about the RAID 10? And what I always get is, we never learned about RAID 10. Well, evidently, when I did that show, maybe I never learned about RAID 10, or I never used it, so I don't talk about it much. But I actually had a comment from one of the listeners to this show, and he said, and I talked about him in the next show, he said, Jack, there is a RAID 10, and this is how it works. This is why it's better than RAID 0 and RAID 5, and this is why just simply people should use RAID 10. So, bone up on those before you go take an interview. That's very important. Another one is, what is NAT? This is what I get. NAT is Network Address Translation. Yep, I know what it is again because I wrote the question. I know what it is, obviously, what the letters stand for. But what is NAT? The worst answer you can give me for NAT is, it's a way to increase security. No, that's not what I want to know. It's a way to actually utilize your routable IP addresses in a proper fashion. We worked with one school recently, about a year ago, and the school actually contacted a company and said, look, we would like to have 1,200 IP addresses. And they're like, what? 1,200 IP addresses? Well, here they hired a network administrator that knew nothing about NAT. So they gave a routable IP address to everything in their network, everything from their HVAC to their computers. Every laptop had a routable IP address. Every iPad had a routable IP address. They are macking. They were creating a hacker's heaven, I like to call it, because a hacker can sit there and scan their network and just hack every piece of gear in there. I thought it would be really cool in the middle of summer to crank their heat up to about 90 degrees, maybe wondering what is going on. Well, some guy in Guam is controlling your HVAC. So NAT is a wonderful way to take care of your addresses. You need, some people claim you need one outside address, and you can network address translate everything through that one address. And I can go over a whole show to tell you why that's not a great idea, because I ran into an issue with a major bottleneck. Even though Cisco routers and any other router or firewall out there is very good at what it does, if you take every device in your network, we have about, with kids bringing their own devices into our network, we probably have about 2,000 devices on our network. If I ran all this through one outside IP address, there is a bottleneck. And it could be the older firewall we have, maybe, maybe it's just not beefed up enough. And I kept telling these companies, look, I need a beefed up firewall to handle this much traffic. This one will do it, and it doesn't. And then I say, next one, this one will do it, and we just keep spending money, and they just don't do it. So what I ended up doing was actually subnetting everything down to Class C networks, and then giving each Class C NAT network table an outside IP address of its own, and it works extremely well. It brought our overall throughput way up, and now we have all kind of speed on our network, internet connections, and everybody is extremely happy. Here's another one you need to know about that you may not use. You may or may not use, and I don't really know if you've ever used it. It's called PoE. So I said, what is PoE? And again, it's power over Ethernet. Sure it is. I know what it stands for. But why do we need it? Why is it good to have a PoE switch? And then I'll explain to you, because you can put a device out there, a wireless access point or something, and come back. You don't have to wire a plug to it. You plug it in, and the power goes through the switch. That's exactly what PoE is, so you may run into that. Here's one, too, is what is two different DNS records that you should be concerned with? Just two. I don't need to know what all of them could be. I don't need A records and MX records, and I didn't say all those. I said give me two DNS records that you need to be concerned about. And very simple, folks, it is forward and reverse lookup. Forward lookup and reverse. So forward, you type a name, it goes to the IP. Reverse, you type the IP, and it goes to the name. That's two DNS records you really need to understand. How about this one? When adding a user to a domain controller, what snap-in do we open? Well, first of all, you better know what a snap-in is. You better know that each individual component on the server is referred to as a snap-in. Into the management console, it's a snap-in. And it's very simple. All they have to do is say AD, and I was happy. Some kids would say Active Directory. You would set up groups and users and security groups, and I don't want a book. If I asked you to write me a book, I would give you a pencil. I just wanted them to say AD, and we could have moved on. Then they're going to ask you trick questions. Here's a trick question. And think about this in your head for a minute. You are asked to connect an iPad to the domain controller. How would you do this? You're going to think, okay, so how would I bind my iPad to my Active Directory? Has to be a way, right? No. And unfortunately for us in schools, we're seeing more and more iPads. And you in business, you're going to see them also. People are going to bring these things in. The iPad, the bad thing about the iPad is it was created to be a consumer device. It was never created for us to control them through the network administration. It was never for us to control with Active Directory. And there's no plugins that I know of. There's no apps that will allow you to connect to AD and map your network drives and do all that fancy stuff. The only thing we can do at best is we allow them to get on the internet and they can surf the web with them because it's a consumer device. All right. Here's another good one. If I don't know if you're into hardware or not, but we're going to touch on a hardware issue that we run into all the time. When changing a hard drive or replacing it with the same model, the computer will not boot. Or worse yet, as you're loading Windows on a computer from the DVD or whatever your media is, it gets to a certain point and it reboots itself. It gets to a certain point and it reboots itself. Or it gets to a certain point and this is memory dumps. What is the problem? The problem with that is you have to go into the BIOS and you may have to change your hard drive settings and change it to compatibility mode. It may be set on SCSI drive. It may be set on SATA drive. I don't know why it happens. It's just with different hard drives, even though they're the same model and everything, and it came out of the same computer, sometimes we have to do this to get it to work properly. Here's one. What is a bridge? So sometimes when you ask somebody what a bridge is, what are they going to tell you? A bridge is something you drive a car over. Yeah, true it is, but in our industry, it's really not. It's actually just a device to connect two known networks. You're bridging two networks together. A lot of people will take a wireless access point, and they'll take it out of the wireless access mode, and they'll put it in bridge mode. And it can actually act as an extender to your wireless or a repeater, if you will, if you want to say that. Of course, when I buy repeaters, I like to actually buy the wireless extenders. They're just a lot easier to set up. But you can take an access point and put it in bridge mode, and it will work perfectly well. How about this one? Why is it easier to set up DHCP than it is to set up static addresses? Now think about that. If you have 800 devices on your network, you have to touch 800 computers to set your static addresses up. If you have DHCP, then everything will work fine and pick its own address up. And here's another kicker for you with DHCP. This happened to us. We've changed internet providers a few times. When you do that, what tends to happen is you should use their DNS servers to make sure everything works properly and in sync, I guess. We did that. So we changed the internet provider, so we got new DNS numbers. When we got the new DNS numbers, the devices that you would have static out there, guess what? You have to go out and you have to reset all those DNS addresses for all those devices you have on your network. Not a good scenario. Where if I have my DHCP server, I go in there, I click the mouse twice, change the DNS numbers. When the computers re-log back in, they get the new DNS. Everybody's happy, go lucky. Here's one. I'm going to give you the sad answer I received one time. Of course, the guy didn't get an internship with us because I just felt that he was a little bit off base. What's the difference between a hub and a switch? He told me that the hub was dumb and the switch was smart, and I'll go along with that. But then he told me that the switch has prettier lights than the hub. I don't know about that. Then he said the switch can do more switching than the hub. And a switch, you can turn it on and turn it off. That's why it's called a switch. Again, he didn't receive the internship. We just didn't bring him in. The truth is the hub actually takes your network connection. Let's say you have 100 megabytes and a 24-port hub. And this is how I actually sold the whole new switching units to my school district. So you take the hub and you take the 100 megabytes and divide it by 24. That's essentially what you're getting across each port of that hub because it's a breakdown over that whole hub. With the switch, there is better smart switching technology in there, right? Because it's smarter than the hub. Anyway, the switch actually has circuitry in it that allows us to very easily allows us to have that 100 or gigabit networking across each individual port because it has circuitry in there that makes that happen. That's why they cost more money, not because they have pretty lights. This is one we talked about earlier. You're asked to punch a hole through a firewall to allow outside world to reach a web server or web page on your network. What port would you open? So before you go for these interviews, make sure you understand some basic ports. I would say at least port 20, port 443, port 80, port 21, port 25, and port 110. Make sure you know what those essential ports are, and then you may want to learn more on top of those. But at least you have an idea that it would be port 80 would allow web traffic through. And the last one we actually asked about was, how do you set up an IP printer? You should also be fast in printers. Understand printers, understand large networks. Do not use USB connected printers like you may have at home. Understand that they use something called IP printers. And the reason it is because we can bring many, many people into one printer, and each individual person does not need to have one of those on their desk. That's why we do it. Anyway, folks, I hope that this show tonight helped you out a little bit and opened your eyes a little bit to what interview questions you may receive out there in the world. My partner actually went out recently and applied for a job, and he walked in and had to take a written test. And that is essentially just too much for me. I don't believe in you coming in for an interview and taking a written test. I think it's a little lame. Most times they do that so they don't have to sit and talk to you. And I like to give people that benefit that I'm there to interview you and I want to talk to you and find out who you are and what makes you tick. That is what's important. But before you go out, make sure you bone up. Another thing to do when you go out on job searches, and one young man didn't do this the other day, and I almost didn't accept him, bring copies of your resume with you. I always take 5. That's a minimum. And if you're going to a school district, I can tell you off the top of my head, take at least 10, because you have 8 board members and 2 other people on that board, and you want to be able to have one to hand out to each person. So that's if you're going to a school. If I'm going to a private company, I always take 5 just to be safe. You don't want to hand it one and say, here, can you run copies for everybody? They're not there to work for you. You're trying to get a job to work for them, and you don't want to start off on the wrong foot. So make sure you have copies of your resume ready to go. Have your references at that point at the interview, and you can say, hey, I have my references available, because we don't send this on the application, in the resume anymore, the cover letter. You don't add your references. You have to leave something open for the interview. If you put everything in your resume that you know about that you can do, there's no reason for that company to call you in to talk to you. You have to, it's a bait thing. You have to bait the hook, get them to take the hook, and then when you get called for the interview, then you can reel them in, and then you got the big fish and you get the job and somebody else didn't get it because you're better prepared. Prepare yourself for these jobs. If you want to know more about this, by all means, email me and I will do a whole show one night. We'll talk about key elements of jobs. I think that's important. Certain ways that you're going to present yourself when you go for an interview. You know, you don't want to be like the one young man. Don't come in to see me with a suit and tennis shoes on because you're not getting the job. You're done. The first impressions are key elements to getting hired anywhere. And I had a young man do that. Because, you know, even if you're down on your luck, and a lot of us have been, you know, I've been out of work before, like struggling to find a tech job. And when you're out there searching for a tech job, if you don't have any money and you have a local secondhand store around, I don't know as an employer where you bought your shiny little patent leather shoes at. And I don't really care if you bought them from somebody that donated them. You know, if you paid $4 for them, I'm not asking you that. They don't have to have a name brand on it. But look presentable. I had one young man went in and he told me after we brought him in, he said, oh, that suit, I picked up at the secondhand store for $10. I was blown away by that because he spent $10 to prepare himself to talk to me because he wanted to get in there and he wanted to shine. You have to be able to shine yourself up and sell yourself. Again, if you put everything on your resume, I'm not calling you because I can read your little book. I can say, I don't like this guy. But if you come in, I can say, I kind of like this guy's resume. It's pretty interesting. And I want to see what kind of character he has, who he is, what drives him, what motivates him. If you can sell me on that, I would give you that job in a minute. and then we could be a really, really good team together, and we can do really, really great things in the computer industry. So, folks, I know this might have been a little bit off base with servers, but this is the way to get those big networking jobs. This is stuff you have to worry about, so that's why I wanted to put it out there tonight. And I thought, what the heck, we're going to put the show together tonight, and we're going to tell you about that stuff. So to get even more started and ready for that new job, again, you have to prepare not only yourself and your clothing and look really, really good. You have to get this knowledge in your head. So if you want to bone up on your knowledge and get a little bit more ahead of anybody else out there, come over to my website, tipsfromtheserverroom.com, and sign up for one of my online classes. I have Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows Server 2012, and VMware ESXi Server. Folks, these are from A to Z, from administrating to running your network, to running those servers, and doing everything in between. You can sign up for one of these online courses at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Look for the online class link at the top of the page. And folks, I'll tell you right now, straight out, they're $200. So I'm not hiding anything from you. It's $200. You sign up, you are in that course forever. And I have a lot of guys coming back saying, Jack, I rewatched this video on DNS, or I rewatched this video on DHCP because I was setting a new server up. Thanks for allowing me to always watch these things. They're there. You take a short quiz with each video. Once you complete the course, I will mail you a certificate. And these are beautiful certificates. You can take them in and show that prospective employer, I got what it takes to get this job. Again, sign up for those at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Folks, I hope you have a great work week if you're out there working. If you are beating the pavement looking for that new job, then you know what? At least take my advice to you. Maybe even re-listen to this show again and pick up some key tips there, because I want to be able to help you get that job, secure that employment, and make money in our industry. Because I may need to call you one day for a little bit of information and say, hey, what do you think about this problem I'm having? You'll be like, hey, Jack, we just set one of those VPNs up, or one of those servers, and you can help me out. So, folks, have a great week, and I'll see you back here next Tuesday night. Again, if you want to catch me on a live show, I try to pull these off at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Tuesday nights on Spreaker. And if you go to tipsfromtheserverroom.com and click on the radio link on the top, you will refresh it at 8 o'clock, and the live play will start. And there's a chat room in there, so we can chat together as we're doing the show. You can bounce questions off of me, and we could talk about it then. Take care, everyone. I'll see you back here next week on Tips from the Server Room. Thank you so much for listening and downloading. I'll talk to you then. Bye-bye now. You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.